Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to find out what is ellagic acid and how can it benefit us? New studies from Oregon State University. And there's one nutrient that really protects you from low immune system and the kind of infections you get when you have a poor immune system. University of Helsinki. Also, transcendental meditation reduces stress and trauma, especially in prisoners, and fosters transformation from Irish University. And then the one nutrient that is the newest one is getting a lot of attention. And I'm going to give you the latest on this. There's new information on NAD. Well, you already know about NAD, but because we have a lot of new listeners, I'll share the latest on how this can reverse aging biomarkers, literally allowing more energy in your cells and you to feel and be younger. Dr. Edward Rozic has some new information. I'll share that. Also, nighttime fasting reduces breast cancer. Well, what exactly does that mean? This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association's publication on Oncology. And vitamin D improves heart function. How so? I'll let you know how much, what it does. Also today, because yesterday I did an entire hour on an original in-depth investigative report, I didn't have a chance to share my thoughts on the presidential contenders. Today I will, as well as offering a commentary from Professor Henry Giroux from Counterpunch on Trump's return to the good old days and the specter of mass terror. I have produced, wrote it last night, a commentary on what does American exceptionalism mean to the rest of the world and to most citizens. It's completely different than what we've been led to believe by those in power. I'll share my commentary on that. And also, for those who don't have an understanding of how inconsistent most people are in the public eye, I'll give an example. Hillary Clinton's running mate, Tim Kaine's, arguments are everything is pro-immigration. Why? Does he believe that, or is it because that's one way of getting the Latino vote? I'll let you decide, but I'll play you a clip that puts it in perspective. And also, we were told that Hillary Clinton did not have intent to commit any crime, and therefore, Comey, the head of the FBI, decided that was enough. End of story. Not quite. I'm going to show you what happens when you bring someone else on board, the former assistant director of the FBI, the man under Comey, directly under Comey, and what he has to say on it. That's a different perspective. And then another input on the conflicts. Also, if we have the audio clip ready, a clip that it probably you've never heard, but it really gives you a perspective on the nature of conflict itself. I'm sure most educated people in this audience will know the person who's in the audio clip. Let's see the others if you have ever heard this clip. It's very important. Let's begin. We begin by talking about ellagic acid. Now, in the average fruit and vegetable, there are hundreds of different chemicals. We don't know what all these chemicals are. We don't know what they do. The trouble is that we try to find the one ingredient in a given plant, an herb, for example, or fruit or vegetable, and then assign all of the credit for any healing to that one nutrient. That's what's been going on for a long time. That's a very monotheistic way of looking. Single cause, single cure. But in the real world, you'll find that everything is multifactorial. And hence, in an orange, we always thought it was the vitamin C. In fact, you don't get a lot of vitamin C in an orange. If I were helping you and you were coming down with a flu or cold, I can assure you the protocol would not be to have an orange, because I might give you 30 milligrams of vitamin C. You might need intravenous 30,000, orally maybe 15,000 to 20,000. Well, you'd have to, you know, have 20 baskets of oranges to get it. So it must be something else that's really helping. If you're getting healthy, your skin is improving, it's tightening up, your collagen is new and improved, so your skin is tighter, your hair is growing, your fingernails are growing. You can't do that with a little bit of antioxidant. So we have to look at all the chemicals that are there. And what we have found that there is a chemical called ellagic acid. It is one of many. And according to Oregon State University, you find it in raspberries. Well, you can get it in other articles, but other berries, but according to the Journal of Berry Research, raspberries and compounds found in other fruit and other berries help your body mass, that means your fat content, reduce it, helps motor function, giving you better balance, coordination, and strength. And so a lot of times we're on high sugar diets, we have unhealthy eating habits, and it's rare that you'll find someone who is unhealthy who then eats healthy food. More often than not, you eat unhealthy food and you become unhealthy. And then to get well, you almost always try to take a medicine, but there's no medicine that actually makes you well. There are medicines that can interfere in the disease process, but none that really reverse it. But nature does that, and that's why we now have a whole class of healing called functional foods, meaning you eat a food because it functions in a healing way in the body. It does something very specific. So your berries, let's talk about raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, pomegranate, elderberries, which is would have to go to the top of my list as your single most powerful healing berry. They all have different acids. They have anywhere between 100 to 200 different chemicals, phytochemicals. So if you want to have better balance, if you want to have better ability to burn fat in the body, if you also want better coordination and strength, then have a serving, which is a cup, of berries every day. Now, that's if you just want to be doing something good. If you want to do something really good, it may be a little more effort, but get the berry concentrates. You can buy them in bottles. And what they've done, they've juiced the berries, then they wick out a lot of the water, anywhere from 30 to 50 to 70% of the water. And then you get something really concentrated. So one tablespoon of a concentrate might give you what would have been in, let's say, a quart of berries. So the more you get in your body, the more healing occurs. Now they're saying that when animals were receiving raspberries, they had better performance with psychomotor coordination and better muscle tone, more strength, and more stamina than those that received a controlled diet. Quote, these results may have important implications for healthy aging. You bet. So the more berries you have, the more healing occurs in your body. Now there's a nutrient that most people never take. It's vitamin E. And there's not just one vitamin E, there's a group. There's alpha tocopherol and beta tocopherol and gamma tocopherol. You need all the tocopherols, plus you need tocotrienols, which are also fractions of vitamin E, taken together. 400 units on the low end, 800 units on the high end, and ideally 400 in the morning, 400 in the afternoon. Especially good for your heart, especially good to prevent stroke, especially good if you've had a stroke, especially good if you want to help your heart if you have irregular heartbeat. Now, according to University of Helsinki, in an article published in Clinical Interventions in Aging, vitamin E helps protect older people from pneumonia. Well, a lot of older people think about taking a flu shot. A, there's no scientific evidence it's protective. B, there is scientific evidence it could injure you. I will be presenting by the end of this week a major new study that I have written an article on that shows you that the flu vaccines are dangerous and don't help people. And what I've done is I've gone beyond just the science into the politics and said, well, then why is it so many people are running out getting their flu shot thinking they're being helped? And so I go behind the propaganda campaign to show you who's behind all this. But something that will help you prevent colds and flus and pneumonia is vitamin D, a good quality plant-based diet, exercise, proper supplements to stimulate your immune system, and now vitamin E. So there's actual good science behind this. In fact, quote, among the one-third of the current study's population who quit smoking for a medium of 2 years, there was a 72% lower risk of pneumonia in association with vitamin E supplementation. So in this group, exercisers receive vitamin E experienced an 81% lower pneumonia risk. So we're learning three things. Millions, tens of millions of Americans have smoked. A lot have drank. A lot have drank and smoke. Both are immunosuppressive. Both prematurely age you. Both are going to make sure that you're at death's door a lot sooner, a decade to two decades sooner than what you otherwise would be. So if you stop smoking and you stop drinking, you're going to help tremendously. But the damage to your liver and kidneys and your brain and your lungs is still there. So if you do not repair that damage, you will still live longer, but not as long, and you will not be as healthy. So if you start juicing every day, even with one glass of green juice a day, it can make an enormous difference repairing the damage, taking out heavy metals. But then if you start taking in more fruits, especially the berries, once again, here's where the berries help. They're great at helping the lungs, the brain, to heal. The more berries you have, the more healthy your brain is. And that's especially important since we're facing a pandemic of brain disorders, including memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. So then on top of that, you start taking nutrients. And if you take vitamin E, that also helps. So you're 72% if you stop and then you start taking vitamin E, and if you exercise, it goes up to 81%. Wow. Big, big difference. And of course, those who do all that, your immune system's strong. Now, from Maharishi University, a study shown that they work with a group of inmates, and they find that those who had the highest rates of lifetime trauma and then reentered society were able to have a substantial improvement if they had practiced meditation. So transcendental meditation can make an enormous difference of reducing stress, reducing trauma, and fostering transformation in mindset, attitude, and behavior. So when you go back into society, you're going back in a calmer way and less likelihood to have the recidivism rate returning to prison. So just something to consider. This was published in the Permanente Journal. Now, our final thing in our health nutrition deals with NAD. For those of you who've heard me mention years ago, decades ago, L-carnosine, that's S-I-N-E, at 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day, that is one absolutely proven nutrient to extend your lifespan because of what it does in protecting the telomeres at the end of your chromosomes. And the longer that those last, the longer that cell lives. And the things you do, like not exercising, stress, pollutants to the body, nutrient deficiencies, the average American diet, all speed up telomeres. So if you do anything wrong, the cell speeds up the aging process. If you do it right, it slows it down. Then about 15 years after L-carnosine was introduced, then we heard about resveratrol, that which is found in grape skin, grape seed, grape juice, and then wine. Of course, all the emphasis was placed upon wine instead of the grape. You get 10 times more resveratrol when you're having it as a tablet than you do if you have it in wine. you get very little wine. But everyone goes towards the wine. I say just take a resveratrol tablet or drink fresh grape juice. Now we have NAD. And what NAD does, it allows the production of more energy. Energy at the same level that you would have had at 60, now back to 30. It literally gives you the energy of youth. Now, how does it do that? Well, it's a cofactor required for cellular energy transfer, and it plays a critical role in regulating the rate at which we biologically age. NAD is used by every cell in your body. In fact, some researchers at Harvard have shown that increased NAD levels allows for the reversal of several biochemical parameters associated with premature aging. And it does this because there is a mitochondria, and you've heard me mention many times that mitochondria are the little furnaces, the little energy factories inside your cell. So the more mitochondria you have working, the more energy your muscles will have, the more your brain will have, your heart will have, and that's why you want the mitochondria. And the more that mitochondria you lose, the slower you become, which is one of the reasons we have made these generalizations. Gee whiz, you're getting older, take it easy. What we're really saying is that your cells don't have the energy for you to be more active, so take it easy. So we compensate to the negative. Instead of saying, well, what do I have to do to slow down this process so I can still be energetic and active and have a highly functioning mind and body later in life? And there's where a specific element in the body is called sirtuins, S-I-R-T-U-I-N-S, and they regulate your lifespan. Now, the good news is that higher levels of NAD can be restored via the unique form of a vitamin B3, and that's what NAD is. It's vitamin B3. It's a nicotinamide riboside. And with this advance, it's possible for aging individuals to boost their NAD cellular levels. And it's a little complicated, but I'll try to make it simple. This NAD is found everywhere in the body. It plays an important role in the transfer of energy released from fatty acids and glucose at your blood sugar to the mitochondria to be converted into cellular energy, what we call ATP, adenosine triphosphate. So when NAD levels decline, energy transfer in cells breaks down, leading to a mitochondrial dysfunction. That results in many of the physical symptoms of aging: slowness, weakness, loss of muscle vitality, loss of quick thinking. So by increasing intracellular levels of NAD, age-related mitochondrial dysfunction can be reversed. So here's an actual situation of reversing the aging process. So NAD battles aging by activating key anti-aging enzymes, and these are called the sirtuins, and specifically SIRT1 and SIRT3. And they contribute to longevity by favorably controlling gene expression. So that's the lay language understanding of it. So get your NAD and your body begins, and it takes about, I would say, around 3 months, begin to see a substantial difference. Within a year, I believe you'll see an enormous difference. And finally, from the Journal of the American Medical Association's Oncology, this study showed that fasting for more than 13 hours a night can reduce the risk of breast cancer reoccurrence. This was done at the University of California, San Diego. And they tracked 2,413 participants, all diagnosed with breast cancer between the ages 27 and 70, in the Women's Health Eating and Living Study to determine the potential effects of nightly fasting on breast cancer prognosis. And what they found was that there was an enormous difference if you fasted for 13 hours. So let's just say that you go to bed at 10 o'clock. As long as you have your last meal at 5, and your next meal at 6 or later in the morning, then that's your 13 hours. But most people make the mistake of eating right up till the time they go to bed, and then they overstimulate the metabolism. Now, in all cultures that practice fasting on a regular basis, maybe one day a week, you have liquids. Now, you can get your protein, your fiber, your complex carbohydrates, your essential fatty acids in a beverage, easy to do in a smoothie, but you have no hard food for a day. That's terrific for you. Because in all of the anti-aging literature, one absolute truth, those who engage in calorie restriction to what their body actually needs live longer lives. And I am intimately familiar with this because I actually did the first study on this that I'm aware of. My study preceded Dr. Roy Warford, who got the credit for it at UCLA. And the reason he got the credit was because I was doing this as an anti-aging scientist in Institute of Applied Biology, where I fasted on a regular basis, a group of rats, and they lived over 26% longer than their normal lifespan. When I went to make my presentation, they didn't believe it because the scientists that I was affiliated with were all very orthodox, and they just didn't believe that diet had anything to do with anything. They were extremely biased. In fact, they would actually get angry with you if you started to suggest that there was such a thing as a clean diet or an invigorating diet or a healthy diet. These people were, none of them were in shape, none of these doctors, none of these scientists. They'd eat anything, and they were all overweight, and most of them smoked and drank, but they were absolutely certain that diet had nothing to do with disease. And they weren't alone. Most other people believe the same thing. So I had to wait years before they gave me the approval to do the study again because they had to provide the rats, over 1,000 rats. So I did it again, except this time I did it a little differently. I didn't feed any of the rats water. I gave them juice, fresh made. I make it myself every day. And all organic diet and grains, nuts, and seeds. And by the way, I didn't have any cages. They thought that was absolutely the most bizarre thing. And in fact, the director of the lab said, "Gary, don't let anyone upstairs." I said, "Why?" "If they see that you have no rats in any of the cages," I said, "but it's cruel and inhumane what they do, putting that little rat in that cage where it has nothing to do all day." I said, "I play classical music, and at the end of experiments, I would take the rats up to the country where I had a farm and let them go. They had a great time, and they lived long lives. Much, much longer than the other rats. And I would always use their damaged rats when they were doing experiments and they would injure the rat. I would take it instead of them suffocating it. In any case, the rats lived much longer with fasting, where you reduce the caloric intake. There was no obesity. There was none of the problems. There's no arthritis. There's none of the problems you see. But they would never release the article for publication because they didn't believe the concept, even though I'd proven it 3 times in a row. So much for objectivity in science. And one last thing, if you have any issues with your heart, there's a good study that was published through the American College of Cardiology at its annual scientific session that showed that vitamin D3 improves heart function in people with chronic heart failure. The study was done at the University of Leeds School of Medicine, and they used 160 patients who were already being treated for their heart failure using treatments like the beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, and pacemakers. But then they had the same group, take either vitamin D or placebo for 1 year. And of the patients who took vitamin D, there was an improvement of 34% in the heart's pumping function. Wow, that was terrific. And there was zero improvement in the placebo group, which showed that vitamin D helps your heart function. So here's the question. If vitamin D3 can help a person's heart function better if they're sick, why couldn't that also be extrapolated to keep a healthy heart healthier longer? We're going to take a break and come back. I'm Gary Null. And by the way, this morning one of our sister stations was off the air for a period of time. I'm not sure why. They're back on now. That's one more reason to always have our telephone number so that you can call in anywhere in America and Canada, which, by the way, is actually larger than the United States and was the original North America. And we want to say hello to all of our Canadian friends. We have a lot of people listening up there, and we thank you. And so when I mention North America, it's really more accurate to say Canada, which includes the United States. And you can call this phone number. And that way, even if there's a problem at your local station, you will always be able to hear the show. Please write this number down. I'm going to give you a new number. Some of you might have 4, 5, 6 numbers. They're all good. But what happens is we have so many people listening that when there are too many, it blocks you. You can automatically call another number. Here's the number, 231-423-1309, 231-423-1309. And to listen to the program on the archives at any time, 24/7, over any listening device, I'll give you that number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. By the way, we just got a notice today from the carrier of over 10,000 station programs around the world that we're number one in the world of all the people who listen over the telephone. And we ranked higher than Laura Ingraham and Alex Jones and all these other programs. And in fact, of this whole chart, we had 22% of the total listeners. Whoa, that's a whole lot of people listening over the telephone each day because it's convenient. You can listen anywhere you go. But of all those 10,000, we're number one listening. So I thank you. And we have a lot of new stuff happening. Lots and lots of great new information pieces. Just to give you a quick update, I've got 3 new films I'm going to be sharing with you. And I'm going to premiere one as a fundraiser in New York for one of our sister stations. But then I'm going to premiere it over the internet the next day over the whole world. I'll let you know more on that coming up. And then we're going to have a webinar afterwards. And also, I'm taking some of the most interesting interviews of the people I've filmed thousands of hours around the world. And I'm going to edit that so you can see that one single interview uninterrupted. And we're going to stream those. For example, when I interviewed Linus Pauling on vitamin C and filmed him, I only used about 1.5 minutes. Well, there's another hour of very important insights. So we're going to have that on a Conversations with a Remarkable Mind up on the website. We have a brand new website, by the way. We're putting up hundreds of articles per day by categories. So we're the go-to place in the world if you want to know about the latest on women's issues, on environmental issues, on gardening, homesteading, vaccines, GMOs. So we have people we've hired who do nothing but that every single day. And we have a brand new website at theprogressiveradionetwork.com that you'll see. So it's all meant to spread the word. Tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're going to talk about the real Syrian narrative, the story that the alternative mainstream media are not telling you. what's really happening, who's behind it, what lies have we been told, with a woman from there, Eva Bartlett, an independent Canadian journalist activist and justice activist. So you hear that this evening, 7 p.m. I have a difficult time watching these debates because I've taken the time to look to see what do the people really mean? What do they really believe in? Are they telling us the truth? Will it be a better world? Will we be safer? Will we have more jobs? Will we deal with racism and inequality? Will we care about our inner cities? We're told that this is all on their agenda. I don't believe them because I've looked into their backgrounds. For example, recent revelations about Trump's misogyny and acts of violence towards women, they're now on full display, but they've been on full display. I could never watch, I don't watch these shows in any case, I couldn't watch these reality shows because they're all based upon debasement and demeaning. One person wins, everyone else loses, but the next week that person won is once again put in a position of losing. Does it not remind you of a form of Rome and the gladiators and the Colosseum, except there's a new context? It's a reality show where people yell, scream. Everything is either manufactured or a dysfunctional drama with a lot of emotional violence. And I don't believe there was any difference in that than in the Trump program of The Apprentice as well. And so he's vulgar, he's crude, he's sexist. And then you listen to Howard Stern. Well, excuse me, if you're going to judge one for these sexist, raunchy, debasing comments about women, then why don't you hold the same standard against Howard Stern and all the morning shock jocks? Or the comedians. Put it into context. We're not a society that elevates the conversation very high. And yet, for political reasons, we'll take one of these people. I believe personally, it's my personal opinion, that Donald Trump stopped growing intellectually, emotionally, at the age of 14. And therefore, there's nothing that he's ever going to do that's going to surprise me because I have no expectation of him except being a spoiled, petulant, narcissistic brat. But what's even more disturbing is that the sensationalism over these incidents hide from view the war on women that has been in full bloom since the 1980s. The Leave It to Beaver mindset that women should stay at home, as in homemaking, They do not deserve equal pay or equal work with men, and they should be defined primarily by as degrading sexual objects, or that they should be excluded from revolutionary movements headed by men. And when we talk about the good old days, is that what they're referring to? Exactly when did we have these good old days? I keep hearing Rush Limbaugh, I hear Bill O'Reilly, I hear others talk about good old days. Define that. Let me hear what those good old days were. And that's a term brought back to life, in part by Donald Trump. Coded in Trump's campaign slogan to make America great again is the ghostly apparition of a return to the good old days, and such a call is not new to political parties that revel in the discourse of decline and celebrates an era that resurrects the barbaric discourses and values of an older fascism for which gender discrimination and homophobia and racial purity became normalized. If memories of fascism are not reduced to third-rate Hollywood films, radical memories of collective resistance seem to die even more quickly in a country wedded to the culture of immediacy and the quickest route to making a profit. Now, this may account in part for the social and historical amnesia on display in the country's refusal to understand Trump as a symptomatic authoritative figure, an anti-democratic force. But this has been on display for a long time, and Trump is merely the unapologetically endorsed person in the moment. These include attacks on women, particularly on reproductive rights, on the LGBT community, on poor minority youth, on neighborhoods inhabited by people of color, on teachers and public servants, on students drowning in debt, on a culture of questioning, on dissent, on critical education, on people of color across the globe, on Muslims, on Mexican immigrants. They also include attacks on any other group that does not kneel down in homage to a neo-fascist embrace of white supremacy and religious fundamentalism and ultranationalism and militarism and the mass incarceration state and a savage global neoliberal capitalist fundamentalism. America is at war with itself. And Donald Trump is simply one despicable register of that war on democracy. What is distinctive about Trump is that he is shrill and unapologetic about his neo-fascist beliefs and his policies, whereas Hillary Clinton, the darling of the liberal and democratic, but not the progressive community, and all the other neoliberal centrists wrap their warmongering policies and support for the financial elite in the empty discourse of liberalism with a disingenuous nod towards social justice and a smile towards democratic values. The embrace of his overt sexism and racism by large numbers of his followers does not augur well for the future of American politics. Needless to say, Trump is not the only politician who benefits from the death of historical memory and the current fog of social amnesia, all of which has produced an accelerated attack on not only women, but on African Americans. What is truly appalling is that with the exception of the Black Lives Matter movement and black protest movements, so little is said about the racism that is part of this long legacy of in-your-face racism that has emerged with the Trump campaign, a racism that the Republican Party has been nurturing since Nixon's Southern Strategy and Reagan's war on drugs, and later Bill and Hillary Clinton's disastrous lulls and the order of policies which produced the worst excesses of the current mass incarceration state. So how does a candidate like Hillary Clinton stand in front of a camera and tell the African-American community, "I'm with you"? You are? Your husband did a lot of drugs. Why isn't he in one of the prisons that you and he made possible with those discriminatory sentences? The hypocrisy is palpable. And throughout his primary and presidential campaign, Trump invoked a language of racist violence that could only be understood in the historical context of the state repression unleashed in the 50s and 60s and 70s in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and Arkansas and other states where expressions of white supremacy and domestic terrorism and police violence exploded in full view of the American people as well as the larger world. The backdrop of this discourse reaches back into a time of racist terror and was captured in images of the young black protesters being beaten by police and white patrons when they tried to integrate lunch counters in cities such as Nashville, Tennessee, and Greenville, North Carolina. It was also on full display when black protesters were attacked by police dogs in Detroit, hosed down by high-water cannons in Alabama, and where nine young African-American students were taunted and shoved as they attempt to enter the all-white Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. The latter are the good old days? Is that what you're celebrating a return to? These good old days also gave us lynchings, the murder of Emmett Till, the church bombings in Birmingham, Alabama, that killed four young black girls. The good old days, in this context, served as a legitimization not only for a ruthless return to racist terror and the suppression of dissent, but the celebration of a type of lawlessness endemic to fascism and updated for the new authoritarianism. What is being suggested here is that this American form of neo-fascism, in its various forms, is largely about social and racial cleansing, and its endpoint is the construction of prisons, detention centers, enclosures, walls, and all the other varieties of murderous apparatus that accompany the discourse of national greatness and racial purity. Americans lived through 40 years of the dismantling of the welfare state, the elimination of democratic public spheres such as schools and libraries, and the attack on public goods and social provisions. In their place, we have the rise of the punishing state, with its support for a range of criminogenic institutions extending from the banks and hedge funds to state governments and militarized police departments that depend upon extortion to meet their budgets. Where are the institutions that do not support a rabid individualism, a culture of cruelty, and a society based upon social combat that refuse to militarize social programs and reject the white supremacist discourses and laws and practices spreading through the United States? What happens when a society is shaped by poisonous neoliberalization that separates economic and individual economic actions from social cost, when privatization becomes the only sanctioned orbit of agency, when values are entirely reduced to exchanged values? Is this what they're referring to? And in that case, Trump is not alone. They should be running as co-presidents because they both value this. So here is the larger picture. When Hillary Clinton talks about our exceptionalism, as do others, Democrats ignore the warning of a well-known Princeton sociologist, Peter Berger, who back in the late 1960s cautioned about the repercussions of creating excessive laws under the assumption that more laws, the more protected we are. Just the opposite is the case. Excessive laws and protections under the illusion of democracy in turn become our prison. Democrats who align with big government and increasing big corporate government habitually generate government controls and bills that they believe empower, but in fact disempower. Hence the Democrat myth that it is the party that protects our interest, especially our socioeconomic interest, while the GOP consistently argues they protect our hegemony in the world. Whether it is we are already great, that's what Hillary Clinton says, we just have to let the world know how great we are, or we were once great and have to restore our greatness, Donald Trump, these are moot arguments. Whether past or present, both are mere reflections of each other and come from the same putrid trough of reason. What has the United States brought to the world? Both modern post-industrial civilization and the developing world. First, our foreign policy. We brought wars, lots of conflicts. In fact, it is estimated that through the conflicts, direct and indirect, through regime changes, and through supporting various programs that dictators, such as in Saudi Arabia, or in Bahrain, or United Arab Emirates, or in Qatar, or in Egypt, or we've supported those in the Congo, we have caused more than 20 million souls to no longer be on this earth. The U.S. is the great enabler of conflict. Even when we know that the weapons that we are selling Saudi Arabia will end up killing innocent people in Yemen, we still look at the value in the profit we get and then how we can spin the damage they've done without any sense of irony that we cause this. We enable all of the major dictatorships, all of those that wanted to see fascism in its highest forms. Egypt is a good example. Which side were we on when the Arab Spring started? We protected all the governments. We protected Mubarak in Egypt. We did not support those who were demonstrating. Conflicts since President Clinton, all right, because there were two Clintons that were co-presidents. Serbia, Bosnia, Croatia. Massive genocide. The first Gulf War, the sanctions after that, Clinton, Rwanda Civil War. They could have interfered, interrupted, stopped it. They didn't. Sudanese Civil War, the Somalia Civil War, the Haitian coup, the Austinian conflict due to the U.S. support of Georgia, and the Georgian Civil War prior to that during Clinton, First and Second Congo Wars in the 1990s, the Panama-Israeli aggression and against Gaza, and the Second Intifada. They're separate. Panama is separate. But we invaded Panama. We didn't have to. Didn't need to. Operation Enduring Freedom in the Philippines, it is still ongoing. Afghanistan, Iraq, Honduras, Libya, Ukraine, and Syria and Yemen. It is we in the United States who are the architects and enablers. Earlier, the U.S. brought the world the Cold War through a cabal in government run by the Dulles brothers. One headed the State Department, the other headed the CIA. They wanted the U.S. to turn against the Soviet Union immediately after World War II. We're still living with the consequences, and Hillary Clinton and the new neocons want us to do that once again. Because there's profit to be made. 200,000 corporations are all lined up to make sure that if Hillary stays in the position of power, then nothing changes to their corporate bottom lines. That's why all the major corporations and all of the neocons fear Trump. Why? Because they can't control him. So therefore, they could run the risk of no longer having war profiteering as their moniker. So they want to go behind the person who's going to make sure that nothing changes. When the Koch brothers support you, when all the leading neocons support you, when President Bush Sr. supports you, and all the Fortune 500 corporate leaders support you, when all of Wall Street supports you, when the pharmaceutical industry supports you, when the media supports you, then you better pay careful attention. What in the world have you done to earn their support, and what do they expect in return? It'd be extremely naive to think otherwise. He may be a narcissistic psychopath. She is an absolutely maniacal sociopath. Either way, it's bad. America gave the world free market, laissez-faire globalization that undermines and erodes national sovereignty around the world. America consistently undermines the internal national interests of populations in order to further Western corporate interest in countries such as Venezuela, Paraguay under Obama, Ecuador and Bolivia and Egypt, and Uzbekistan and Crimea. Free trade agreements that keep nations indebted to private interest. When a nation can no longer pay its bills, the International Monetary Fund comes in, gives them loans, knowing they will not be able to repay it, and that opens the door for you can't repay your bills, now turn over this highway system, this water system, this gas system, we're going to take out the cobalt, we're going to take out the aluminum, and you can say nothing about it. If you do, we'll send in the jackals. So first, they bribe them, and then they kill them. We have given the world military colonialization in a way that it is not seen in world history. 900 foreign U.S. bases in over 63 countries. We engage embargoes on any country that we're opposed to. And who suffers? Never the ruling elite. The poor, women and children, and the elderly. So if you say you're for women, then what about the women in Iran? There's over 30 million of them. And what about the women in Iraq and Afghanistan, Libya and Syria, Honduras, Crimea? Do those women not count? Global network of international NGOs, these non-governmental organizations, they promote American hegemonic interest all across the globe. They're loaded in Haiti. For every $100 given to Haiti in some form of aid, 99 of those $100 stays out of Haiti. These NGOs load themselves up with that money. The Haitians, no. We gave the world the School of the Americas, training of international leaders from developing nations to have death squads and anti-labor activists that would go in with Washington's consensus and kill any democratic movement, kill any freedom movement, kill any labor movement. The U.S. is the largest polluter in the world, even more so than China. We only have 4.5% of the world's population, yet we produce over 26% of its energy requirements because of our standard of living. And the largest single polluter in the world, the U.S. military, and yet is exempt from all anti-pollution laws. We favor corporate interests through free trade laws in the World Trade Organization to further environmental destruction, favoring capitalist markets and the access to natural resources. We exert control over the UN, especially the Security Council, that blocks any actions by countries who pose investigations or rules against U.S. interests. And a person came to my office last year from the UN, a high-level person, and said every single office in the UN has a CIA asset in it that you're beholden to. And who knew? Now we know. We also know that the U.S. heads the globalization efforts of industrialized chemical agriculture, including GMOs, purely an American invention, albeit a German company like Bayer and BASF are also pursuing this. The Rockefeller medical paradigm dominates the World Health Organization, the largest international health body, completely pharmaceutical and vaccine-based, and undermining all the nation's indigenous medical and healing systems. The allowance for lies and health to create disease that don't exist to sell and export drugs. Many countries, such as China and Southeast Asia, countries didn't have certain psychological conditions until the U.S. and U.K. drug companies started marketing certain drugs associated with non-existent conditions in those countries. Hence the rise of those very conditions that are being diagnosed, not because the people have them, but it's a way of selling more drugs. Hydrofracking, now a policy of Hillary Clinton, pushed on other nations. The long history of exporting toxic pesticides and fertilizers and chemicals like DDT and Agent Orange that have created environmental and health crisis in these countries. The petrodollar enables U.S. interest to trump indigenous national interest. The transformation of the internet and the IT as means of government and corporate spying and censorship on information and knowledge. The internalization and the internationalization, I should say, of war on drugs for many parts of the world. We should not have a war on drugs, but the United States gave us a war on drugs, enabling the illegal trade of drugs, cocaine from Colombia, heroin from the Golden Triangle in Afghanistan, all under the protection of the CIA. The shadow banking system that enables the 0.1% of the multinational corporations to bilk nations, pay no taxes. Commodity trading on global scale, especially commodities essential to life, such as, well, that's led to the Ethiopian famine, which is not really a famine because there's plenty of food stored in warehouses in Ethiopia, but no one can afford due to the hedge fund investments and the derivative pricing jacking up the prices. Bush and his associates ushered in the age of war on terror following 9/11. Now this exported through the world to enable tighter controls over populations that undermine democracy and personal freedom of people. That's the war on terror. The U.S. is the enabler of human rights violence through its silence and denial in the international community. And the abuse of women. When was the last time Hillary Clinton stood up to the head of Saudi Arabia? The ruler of Saudi Arabia says, hey, we can't do any more business with you on any level, buy your oil, sell you any of these weapons, if you continue to keep women as if they're your slaves. And that's what Saudi Arabia is. And Saudi Arabia is one of the worst human rights abusers in the world. They have thus far this year executed by beheading more people than ISIS. That's hard to do, but they managed. And yet, we, the United States, managed to get them the position of head of the Human Rights Commission at the UN. And then you look at the human rights violations based on hatred and prejudice in Saudi Arabia, Myanmar, against Muslims, Pakistanis, prosecuting non-Sunnis, Europe's treatment of immigrants, UK's inherent racism, Australia's abuse of the Aboriginals, child labor and warlords in West Africa, slave sweatshops in Indonesia, Cambodia, Bangladesh, Myanmar. And then look locally. Do you think we're any better? Perpetuation of huge debt bubbles and personal credit cards, auto loans, student loans, mortgages that benefit corporate profits? Who do we owe this money to? The very people who rarely pay, if never, taxes, and that exploit us because of their ability to control the laws. Why can't we just say, forgive the debt? They've got enough profit, but we won't. That's why they need Hillary for president. The National Security and Surveillance Network now violates any personal privacy or freedoms for anyone in our nation. Increasing censorship of freedom of speech, government collusion with companies like Facebook, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Bill Gates Foundation to censor and block free speech that is contrary to the official government positions on domestic and international issues. Favoritism towards a completely corrupt insurance industry, not just health insurance, but all forms of insurance are corrupted. Promotion of economics of usury. The denial of toxic chemical risks, even when Europe and other countries ban many common household products and chemicals, the U.S. government continues to enable them to remain on the market. The world's largest prison system and most inmates per capita, 2.3 million in prison right now, 1 in 10 adults, 4.7 million on parole. A full compromised mainstream media, completely corrupt at every level. A media that no more than the mouthpiece of government funded by private interests. There is no national public media in the United States anymore, and even many people on Pacifica are corrupted by this ideological shift. An entertainment industry left unchecked that expends and expands the immorality of other industries, promoting misogyny, pornography, satisfying the most debased masculine traits, leading to violence, racism, keeping the racial divide alive, honoring war and weapons, hence the private military-industrial complex, tasteless art, persecution of independent media and journalists, whistleblowers, human rights and environmental activists and researchers, the regime of faux science, particularly medicine, agriculture, and certain fossil fuels, nuclear, corporate science that the U.S. federal agencies now profit from financially instead of regulating as per their original mandate. So the next time someone tells you that we are exceptional and we want to return to the good old days, please remind me, and what was the larger context of those good old days? And are you willing to include any of the things I just mentioned into your picture of exceptionalism? I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. I wonder.